It's Monday, December 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President-elect Trump takes aim at a key Obama administration achievement.
For me, one of the best things is seeing the place that so many Christians have revered over the centuries.
Christmas is celebrated around the world. Also ahead, an author critical of China to be part of the Trump administration. Medicine from dirt and unsung heroes of the U.S. space program. It's all on today's International Edition. President-elect Donald Trump has said many times during his campaign for the White House that he would change the Affordable Care Act. That's one of the main achievements of President Barack Obama.
On my first day, I'm going to ask Congress to immediately send me a bill to repeal and replace Obamacare.
Just how Mr. Trump and the Republican-held Congress might do that remains a question. We explore this further with VOA Senate Michael Bowman in our studio.
Jim, there's a fight that has been brewing for nearly 7 years. It's been almost seven years since Barack Obama signed the Affordable Care Act into law. Ever since then, Republicans have been plotting to rid the country of this law. And in fact, by all accounts, Republicans are going to make a very concerted push to do that in January. At long last, they will have a Republican in the White House. They will have control of both houses of Congress. And if ever there was an opportunity to rid the country of President Barack Obama's signature domestic achievement, the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, this is it. The question is, how will they do it? And what sort of reaction will there be, and from whom?
There has been quite a bit of talk about repeal and replace during the campaign season, although Donald Trump has backtracked on a lot of issues so far and apparently has had quite a bit of discussions with Barack Obama. We don't know what about, but it could be interesting to see how far this really goes.
Well, what Mitch McConnell said, and he's the Senate Republican leader, what he said before Congress wrapped up for the holidays was that at the beginning of the year, they want to pass a resolution repealing Obamacare, or at least stating an intention to repeal Obamacare. Mm. It's not really clear how this is going to work. But then, of course, all the reporters in the room asked him, well, what then? And he said that then there would be a period where they would be assessing the situation and coming up with a plan. Well, as Democrats were very quick to point out, Republicans have been promising a plan to replace Obamacare for years. And every time that they seem to come up with a plan, there are a few stumbling blocks. Number one, it is not possible to eliminate the provisions of Obamacare that cause the most heartburn in terms of the mandate which compels people to buy insurance. It's not possible to preserve the very popular elements like allowing your kids to stay on your policies until the age of 26, not being able to exclude people for pre-existing conditions without also having the elements that people really don't find quite so appealing. So you sort of have to have your peas and carrots along with your dessert. And this is one of the things that they're running into. Also, simply cobbling this together in a way that will provide the kind of expansion of healthcare insurance that was actually achieved under Obamacare in a Republican model, a more free market model, is proving to be quite challenging. Presumably, if it were easy to come up with a plan, they would have done it a long time ago.
Yes, absolutely. I know this is a head scratcher for a lot of people in our audience who, you know, in their countries, this isn't really an issue. I mean, it seems to be an issue here in the United States more so than in most places of the world. And with these competing ideologies bandied about in the political arena, it seems like we're going to be talking about this for quite some time.
Well, Jim, most countries, most advanced industrialized nations, have a socialized medical system where everything is controlled by the government and where you essentially have free health care from cradle to grave. The United States is not entirely free market. There are programs where the government tries to provide a certain amount of health care for the poor, for the elderly. Mm-hmm. But most people are, in fact, on their own when it comes to the private health insurance market. And the idea behind Obamacare is that we are going to try to get as many people into a private system. Republicans are always talking about socialized medicine. Obamacare really isn't socialized medicine. What it is an attempt to prod as many people to join the private health insurance market as possible through carrots and sticks. The carrots are subsidies if you don't make very much money. The sticks are penalties if you don't sign up.
There you go.
The problem is that what this relies on is the concept that young people who are generally healthy and don't incur a lot of costs in the medical field, that a lot of young people will sign up, and that for signing up, they will in effect subsidize the older, sicker people. Young people who are relatively healthy think they'll live forever, think that they're invincible, and guess what? They don't want to sign up for it. They don't want to spend the money on it.
Sure.
So there's sort of an economic imbalance in the system where you've had a lot of older, sicker people sign up, but not so many younger, healthier people.
Certainly one who is always invincible in the Senate. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman, and we look forward to many more great times together in the year to come.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Happy 2017 coming up.
And for more, be sure to go to our website at voanews.com. You may also follow us, if you like, on Twitter at @VOA_IE. A lot of great material on our stream constantly. My Twitter stream is filled with VOA and Asia-related stories, and you'll find that one at VOA Stevenson. Thousands of search and rescue workers from across Russia, including more than 100 Navy divers, converged on the Black Sea port of Sochi Sunday. They are searching for clues to the crash of a military plane that plunged into the sea with 92 people on board. A military spokesman said there were no survivors from the flight, which carried dozens of singers from the internationally acclaimed Alexandrov Ensemble. That's the official choir of the Russian Armed Forces. President Vladimir Putin declared Monday a nationwide day of mourning as search teams prepared to work through the night to find evidence that could help determine why the Tu-154 jetliner crashed just 2 minutes after takeoff. Hours after the crash, officials said debris from the aircraft and some bodies had been recovered just off the Russian coast, with the main section of the plane found in 70 meters of water and 1.5 kilometers off the coast. Authorities said there was no immediate evidence of terrorism, while cautioning that criminal activity had not been ruled out. You'll find more as International Edition comes your way after these headlines. Among the top stories currently in Asia, powerful typhoon slams into Philippines, spoiling Christmas. North Korea defiant as rivals undergo uncertain change. Officials count around 30,000 war dead in Afghanistan this year. China's aircraft carrier to drill in Western Pacific. South Korea prosecutor weighs raid of presidential palace. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more at the voanews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app if you happen to have a smartphone. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The Palestinian Authority is hosting a throng of visitors for Christmas celebrations in the West Bank town of Bethlehem. Robert Berger is on the scene. He filed this report for VOA.
Thousands of pilgrims from around the world flock to Manger Square here in Bethlehem to celebrate Christmas. There were long lines at the ancient Church of the Nativity as the faithful waited to visit the grotto where tradition says Jesus was born. Laura Gaudio came from the U.S. state of Ohio.
It's really wonderful. For me, one of the best things is seeing the place that so many Christians have revered over the centuries. I think the whole energy of the city is really special.
In the Holy Land, religion and politics are never far apart. In order to get to Palestinian-ruled Bethlehem from Jerusalem, pilgrims had to cross through Israel's border wall at the entrance to the city. The security barrier, as the Israelis call it, was erected more than a decade ago to stop Palestinian suicide bombers from entering the Jewish state. Maria Ireland from the U.S. state of Maine said the wall casts a shadow over Christmas.
It's upsetting to see people that don't have access to everything. Both sides. People can't come here from Israel. Palestinians can't go to Israel without permits. So it's sad to see a special land like this that people love so much so divided.
Bethlehem's Palestinian mayor, Vera Baboon, agrees.
No one can bring peace by building walls. Impossible.
But in a turbulent Middle East beset by wars and terrorism, the little town of Bethlehem enjoyed a peaceful Christmas. Robert Berger for VOA News, Bethlehem.
And as we begin to move from December 25th to December 26th, we wish many people around the world a very happy Boxing Day. He wrote a book called Death by China. Now he's part of the Trump administration and leading the newly created White House National Trade Council. It's a move that's getting some serious attention. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more from Washington.
And please, help defend America and protect your family. Don't buy made in China.
This is Peter Navarro's documentary, Death by China. He's a critic of how America does business with China. And now he's a member of President-elect Donald Trump's administration.
Where's that product made?
Probably in China.
China.
This is made in China.
Trump's transition team released a statement Wednesday saying that Navarro, an economist at the University of California, Irvine, will shrink our deficit, expand our growth, and help stop the exodus of jobs from our shores. On Thursday, Beijing issued its own statement.
We hope the U.S. side can work with China to maintain a healthy and stable development of China-U.S. relations, including trade relations, which serve the interests of both countries and are conducive to world development and prosperity.
Speaking via Skype, analyst Harry Kazianis says Navarro is right for the job.
It's very reassuring to have somebody who sort of understands the U.S.-China relationship on an economic level, strategic level, but also military level, talking with President Trump about these issues and giving him some wise counsel. So I think it's a great move. You
can't have the choice of Navarro, someone often called hawkish, may not sit well with his Chinese counterparts.
Both China and the U.S. share broad common interests, and cooperation is the only right choice by both countries.
Candidate Trump talked tough and spoke often as he blamed China for lost American jobs and a huge trade deficit. Naming Navarro to head the National Trade Council may signal a shift in how the two countries do business going forward. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Health agencies like the CDC and the World Health Organization have been sounding the alarm on antibiotics for years. Resistant bugs are becoming more and more common, and the drugs that fight them are becoming less and less effective. Today, researchers are looking all over the world, sometimes in exotic places, for new antibiotics to treat infections that are becoming tougher and tougher to kill. But some researchers at New York's Rockefeller University are looking closer to home. They're digging in the dirt of the city's most iconic park. VOA's Kevin Enix reports.
Armed with a spade and a baggie, molecular microbiologist Sean Brady and postgraduate student Zachary Charlotte Powers are looking for the next generation of antibiotics.
So almost any drug that's coming from a bacteria that was found someplace else in the world, we could identify a sequence that suggests a bug like that exists in a sample of New York City Park.
The team looked at 275 soil samples taken from the famous Central Park in Manhattan and a few other parks in the hopes locally found dirt may lead to new drugs. They found genetic evidence of bacteria with the potential to produce compounds that could become treatments for a variety of conditions.
Many of the molecules that we've used in the clinic have historically been isolated from organisms that have their origin all over the world. And we were able to find genetic evidence that you'd be able to find the similar or the same gene clusters, and therefore similar or the same molecules, in New York City's park soils.
They published the results of their study in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in November. The team used a sophisticated computer program to find the parts of a microbe's genome that ought to produce antibiotic compounds. Then they synthesized those compounds.
Almost any molecule you can think of that might have come from bacteria, so if you don't know those types of molecules, things like vancomycin, the antibiotic of last resort, we can find molecule or genes that we think would encode molecules like that. Rapamycin, immunosuppressant, we can find genes that encode molecules that look like that, or even new versions of those molecules.
So far, the team has synthesized two new antibiotics that are especially effective against Staphylococcus and Streptococcus bacteria, and they're still looking, hoping to find more. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
And if you'd like to see this story, all you have to do is go to our website at voanews.com. Some great video by Kevin accompanying that story. And you can follow us on Twitter as well at @VOA_IE. While you're online, check out our Facebook page at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, you know, anytime you get Kevin Costner and Octavia Spencer on the big screen, you're probably in for a really good movie. There's a new one that's starring these Oscar winners, and it tells the true story of the female engineers and mathematicians behind the U.S. space program. International Edition's David Byrd tells us about Hidden Figures.
Katherine Johnson is an African-American mathematician who worked as a computer at NASA in the early 1960s. She calculated flight trajectories for the Mercury Project, for the 1969 Apollo 11 flight to the Moon, and she continued to work for the space agency into the shuttle age. Taraji P. Henson plays the mathematical genius. The Oscar-nominated actress says that when she learned of Katherine Johnson's life and influence, she felt cheated by her own experience.
That's why this movie was important to me, because I remember reading about it, and, you know, when I found out it was true, I was angry because I was like, somebody stole a dream from me. Mm. Somebody stole an option from me. They lied to me.
Yeah.
I will have you know, I was the first Negro female student at West Virginia University Graduate School. On any given day, I analyze the manometer levels for air displacement, friction, and velocity, and compute over 10,000 calculations by hand. So yes, they let women do some things at NASA, Mr. Johnson. And it's not because we wear skirts. It's because we wear glasses.
Octavia Spencer plays Dorothy Vaughn, a mathematician who arrived at the Langley Memorial Aeronautical Laboratory in Hampton, Virginia, and at the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics, the predecessor to NASA. Vaughn headed a department made up entirely of African-American women. Spencer says the women's camaraderie helped them overcome both racism and sexism.
The camaraderie and the sense of community was very, very real back then. And I think we need to get back to that, mm-hmm. the sense yes. of community and the fidelity that women have yeah. with each mm-hmm. other.
Yeah.
Because Janelle says it all the time, that together we are stronger.
Janelle Monáe plays Mary Jackson, another mathematician at Langley and at NASA. Monáe says the women portrayed in the film had a strong sense of their destiny and worth.
I think that these women were able to vent and speak honestly and openly with each other and uplift each other when they got discouraged. But they didn't allow the racism or the sexism to get in the way of them pursuing their dreams. They knew their dreams were valid.
Jim Parsons, best known for his role in TV's The Big Bang Theory, says Hidden Figures shows how far a society can go if people work together, if they put aside the things that separate them from one another.
It almost sounds cliche saying that, but I think it's only that way because it's a lesson that needs repeating over and over and over again. And that's why I think that this movie is specifically about certain things at a certain time and about certain people, but it's equally applicable in different ways now, and it will be 20 years from now, you know.
Oscar winner Kevin Costner plays Al Harrison, the director of the Space Task Group.
What it reveals, what's hidden, are the women that were very much a part of NASA. You're seeing a male-dominated room most of the time in the movie, but what you come to realize is that there was women behind that. And in this instance, there was three African-American women who had a tremendous impact on what actually happened.
Hidden Figures has been nominated for a Screen Actors Guild Award for the cast and a Golden Globe for Octavia Spencer. The film is set for limited release in the United States Christmas Day. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
And the film is also a good reminder that with all the technology that we have around us, the most powerful computer is right in your own head. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Aydin Utku. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The fight against corruption must become central to the broader strategy against terrorism, said Undersecretary of State for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights Sarah Sewell. Corruption, she said, undermines the struggle against terrorism at every level. Corruption fuels new terrorist threats, often in the form of violent extremism. When public officials and businesses can demand bribes with the assurance of impunity, the compact between citizens and government is broken. This enables terrorists to cast themselves as a better deal. As Secretary of State Kerry has said many times, there is nothing more demoralizing, more destructive, more disempowering to a citizen than the belief that the system is rigged against them. Over the past 15 years in Afghanistan, for example, the Taliban has been able to replenish its fighters by exploiting discontent with government corruption. The Department of State's research on Africa found that personal experiences with corruption were significantly linked to political violence, including violent extremism. Corruption helps existing terrorist groups sustain operations and infiltrate new areas. In Mosul, for example, smuggled oil enriched the Islamic State as it attempted to seize the city. In Eastern Europe, foreign terrorist fighters have bribed border guards on their path to jihad. Across West Africa, there have been reports of soldiers selling weapons on the black market to Boko Haram, or even tipping off Al-Qaeda about future troop deployments for a fee. Finally, corruption saps the government's ability to combat terrorist threats and ensure national security. For example, when Nigerian President Buhari took office last year, he found an army hollowed out by graft and wholly incapable of confronting Boko Haram. When Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi assumed power in Iraq, he found 50,000 ghost soldiers on the payroll, draining precious resources from the fight against the Islamic State. For all of these reasons, Secretary of State John Kerry has called the fight against corruption a national security priority. For years, the world has looked at corruption as a threat to economic growth and human rights, said Undersecretary Sewell. But we have underestimated the threat. Corruption is far more dangerous than many realize, and it is time to confront it with the urgency, intensity, and resources it deserves. In doing so, we can help build societies that are not only more transparent and accountable, but are also more secure and safe from the threat of terrorism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.